This is Press Play. I'm Madeline Brand, and welcome back to a special Press Play on KCRW. California's clout in 2020. We're at the Edison Theater in Long Beach as the California Democratic Party convention is underway. I'm here with Josh Barrow, host of KCRW's Left, Right, and Center, Nomaki Konst, who is a board director at Matriarch PAC, and Gustavo Arellano, features writer at the LA Times, formerly of EOC Weekly. Welcome back, you guys. Okay, a presidential town hall forum hosted by Univision wrapped up a few hours ago here in Long Beach. And I guess the overall question that this brings up is, how important is it for the presidential candidates to court Latinx voters in California, Gustavo?
We are the future. We're not the future. We're the present. Latinos are now a plurality, have been a plurality of the population in California. The Democratic Party in California is now ostensibly the party that was radicalized by Pete Wilson and Proposition 187, the 1994 initiative that sought to penalize undocumented immigrants and turn the state to the far left tilt that it is today. So I think this is what makes California so important and overall for the future of the Democratic Party. As California goes for the Democrats, so it is going to be for the rest of the United States. And you do have not even just young Latino voters, even myself, Gen X voters in their 40s who are never going to vote for the Republican Party again. And they want more liberal activism from your Democrats. You don't want the moderates, especially when it comes to the issue of immigration. So we're very important.
The latest polling that I saw shows that about 25% of likely Democratic voters are Latinx. Mm. So, but the question I have is, do they actually vote? Because we saw some issues with that with Kevin De Leon's candidacy, with Antonio Villaraigosa's candidacy. Both of those candidates really relied on a Latino voting base that didn't turn out as heavily as an older white voting demographic turns
when
out.
Is a sleeping giant going to flex its political muscle? That's all Democrats ever want to know. And look, at the end, the Latinos are going to vote for issues or candidates they really feel enthusiastic about. And nothing against Kevin De Leon, who was really good. There was nothing enthusiastic for Latinos to come out. On the other hand, especially in California, Latinos are legendary, I would argue, for being reactive voters. So if you're going to demonize them, they're going to come out and they're going to vote you out of office. And if you want an example of that, come to my beautiful Orange County, where it's all blue and all those Latinos did come out to go against those Republicans during the 2018 election.
Okay. All right, then.
Well, it's funny because Democrats are always, they know that the Latinos are the future of the Democratic Party, and then they wonder, why don't you vote for us more often? Well, maybe if you had some candidates that were exciting for once,
well,
then they would vote
more.
Well, are there some now? Now there are. Theo Bernie. A lot of Latinos are going for Bernie Sanders. Kamala Harris is not exciting because of her record on the criminal justice system in California, and especially in Orange County, siding with a former Orange County district attorney on the snitch scandal. And, you know, and you're not necessarily going to vote for Latino candidates either. Julian Castro, you know, you think, oh, all the Latinos are going to vote for him. Well, he's not really known in California, so he's not really gaining much traction.
Well, and you can say the same with African-American voters. They are going for Joe Biden. They're not going for Cory Booker.
Right. Overwhelmingly. So close to half of the black vote for Joe Biden, especially older black voters. I mean, I think in all of these demographic groups, you see a huge generational divide where you see very, very strong support for Joe Biden among older black voters. It's a much more fragmented field for the young black vote. And you see sort of similar divisions among white voters and Hispanic voters also. I think one interesting thing when you ask about Hispanic turnout, which has historically lagged both black and white turnout, those New York Times surveys have interesting things to say about non-voters, because I think people sort of project onto non-voters, like these are people who are like me and feel like me but don't vote. And that's generally not true. In particular, non-voters tend to be much less ideological, which is probably a reason they don't vote. They don't have strong and coherent political views. The big exceptions to this seems to be the Hispanic vote, where the non-voting Hispanic population is as far or farther to the left than the voting Hispanic population. And so that is the opportunity for Democrats, but it's been the opportunity for Democrats for a long time. And to Gustavo's point, it's not clear, you know, I mean, obviously you need to excite people, but they haven't found the formula to close that gap yet.
But you're saying they did with Theo Bernie.
He's gaining excitement, especially amongst the millennials that I know. They're burners or whatever you want to call them, whatever they call themselves or whatnot.
Burners.
But like, yeah, burners. But not the Joe Bidens, not the Kamalas. And then the other voter, the other candidates like Buttigieg and whatnot, they still, at least in Southern California, they still don't know enough about
them. Well, some of that has to do with Prop 187. They're the children of the families that were restricted health care and education. And Bernie's you know, top two issues for millennials is education and healthcare. And so I think that there's been some sort of connecting agent there. And you know, he's been running for the last 6 years, and he's invested, you know, heavily in, you know, fighting for DACA recipients. I mean, much of his support staff in California and in Nevada are DACA recipients.
Yeah.
But given that, given the infrastructure that he's built, I just find it surprising how weak his polling numbers have been nationally and across many demographic groups in this campaign.
I agree.
He took north of 40% of the vote nationally 4 years ago. He's polling it generally at less than half of that.
Yeah.
And so I think that's, you know, the question is, you know, why do people vote for Sanders in 2016? Obviously, it was a combination of people who are committed socialists and had a devotion to his agenda, people who wanted to shake up the system and wanted an outsider, which could mean a lot of different things ideologically, and people who didn't like Hillary Clinton. And so I think we're learning something about what the composition was of those three groups. Obviously, he's bleeding some voters on the left to Elizabeth Warren, who's made a somewhat similar pitch, but he hasn't been able to rebuild that coalition.
But when you look at the numbers, a recent PPIC poll here in California found that 39% of Latinx voters preferred Bernie, 21% Biden, 5% for Warren. 5% for Warren, even though she's also promising free college and Medicare for all.
Again, Bernie's been running for 6 years. Warren, even though she's not new to the political stage, definitely she's new in the presidential election. I think, and I just think Bernie just gets much more enthusiasm out of instead of Warren, but that might change.
And that's the factor that we didn't recognize in 2016. You know, yes, he did get those numbers, but exactly where we are today, 2016, people were underestimating him, and then he surprised people in the polls in Iowa where there were coin flips, and in New Hampshire, of course, he took a win, and Michigan, you know, he did very well, and in California, if the race hadn't been called, some would say that he would have probably done a little bit better, but if you recall, the day before the primary, the election was called for Hillary. So, you know, he has a very enthusiastic base that I don't think even Warren has to that level. And sometimes that doesn't play into the polls. I mean, he has a high millennial base, and polls tend to skew older. Landlines, I mean, there are some polls that don't use landlines, but let's be real. That's what's being cited in the press, and there's a factor on psychology there.
Broadly, a lot of the state-level polling has just not been very good, and this has been a problem going back through 2016. I mean, another big issue, in addition to who will pick up their phone these days, is just the polls to who will talk to a pollster. You tend to get way too many people who either have college educations or at least tell the pollster that they have college educations in these polls, and so this is a big issue in general election polling in places like Michigan and Wisconsin, where some of these pollsters will, you know, report a big result for Democrats, and you look at the poll and it says that Michigan is as well educated as Massachusetts, which is not true. And so that's been a problem in the primary polling as well. That could be a point of weakness for Bernie, because his voting base skews less educated than Elizabeth Warren's, who really over-indexes with college-educated voters. But a lot of pollsters have been having a lot of trouble accurately representing the electorate in these state polls. That's a part of a reason that you see results that look so different across different pollsters, including in California, that paint an unclear picture. People are really having trouble figuring out, you know, how to get an accurate sample of the electorate.
And are they also having trouble figuring out what the electorate wants when you poll people on their top issues, what they say versus what they really want? Are campaigns finding it difficult to skew their message to these polls?
I would say yes. I mean, every pollster is different in their methods, and some of the issues, it might just be like, are you more conservative? Well, what does conservative look like today as a Democrat? Are you more progressive? What does that look like today as a Democrat? Is it economics or is it social? So all these issues are a little bit conflicting in today's polling, and we might have some big surprises in some of these early states as a result.
Let's talk about Orange County, because there was a bit of a political revolution in Orange County last year in the midterm election. And so, Gustavo, do you think that Orange County will continue to trend bluer?
What's interesting about the 2018 congressional elections was that a lot of it had to deal with the candidates that were running. There was no enthusiasm whatsoever with the Republicans who lost. I mean, they were all a bunch of losers, all of them. Dana Rohrabacher, loser. Mimi Walter, loser. Diane Harkey, who was running down there, no one likes. I mean, and I'm talking as a lifelong Orange County resident who also tracked Orange County stuff for years. And so, you were running against Trump. You're running with very, you know, pathetic candidates on the Republican side. Now in 2018, though, and the Republicans, they thought they were going to have a catwalk. Now, nope, they are going to come with their guns a-blazing. But here's the thing. The candidates that the Democrats have had for Congress, they're actually pretty good. Katie Porter, a rock star. I guarantee she's going to win easily. I mean, the Republicans don't even have anyone against her. The two Competitive races are going to be the one that's held now by Harley Ruda, because Michelle Steele, who's a longtime Orange County supervisor and the wife of former GOP, California GOP chair Sean Steele, she's running against him. And then Gil Cisneros, he barely won against Young Kim, who has been a Korean-American woman who has been a politician up there for years. So those are going to be the really competitive ones. And really, the competitive one's going to be Gil Cisneros. But everything else, Orange County is still going to be majority blue. But one other thing. All of the American media just went obsessed. Oh, Orange County's blue. Okay, maybe on the congressional level, but 75% of the local seats are still run by Republicans. So that said, the Democrats now have the head of the Democratic Party in Orange County is Ada Briceño, who comes from Unite Here. I mean, she's a like longtime labor activist. She's a type of Democratic Party chair who goes protest for hotel workers at Disneyland and then gets arrested. I don't see Tom Perez doing any of that, at least not yet.
We had Gustavo on a live episode of Left, Right, and Center last September, and Gustavo said that he thought Democrats were only going to pick up one of those four seats in Orange County.
So what do I know?
And then they went 4-for-4. I mean, and so I think, and you know, it's been a surprising thing, right, how rapid the shift was in Orange County. But what we've seen in elections this year in places like Virginia, in the Kentucky governor's race, is that these suburban areas, especially affluent suburban areas, just keep getting worse for Republicans. So I think that's a reason to think the blue-Orange County trend will continue.
But aren't a lot of people saying that they're also a cautionary tale for the Democratic Party, because these areas are not super left-wing, super progressive,
well,
right?
Well, you think that, but Katie Porter ran as a moderate, and now she's extremely progressive in the progressive wing, and she's going to be uncontested.
Yeah, that's an anomaly, though, because that's around UCI, so there's always been a lot of liberal voters. Like, they would always vote Republican on state Senate and state assembly, but the city council in Irvine and around that was always Democrats, a lot of hard left as well. But Katie is a great example of someone who does exemplify the modern-day suburban Democratic voter. She's a single mom. She's, you know, educated, teaches at UCI Law, and of course, again, she's been a viral star. Just she's walked the walk. Like, in her district, she is beloved in a way that I have not seen any congressperson there liked at all. Because remember, the Republicans that voted, people just voted for the Republicans. It was a bunch of kooks: Bob Dornan, Dana Rohrabacher, Bill Danmeyer. No one actually liked them. They just hated Democrats. Now, at least with Katie, there's someone that someone actually likes for once. Also, Mike Levin down in South Orange County, people like him a lot. But Katie's, you know, Katie, if the Democrats on the national scale were smart, they would really listen to a lot of what Katie has to say.
And what about Harley Ruda and Gil Cisneros, however? They're very much in the center of the Democratic Party.
And they have to be, especially with Harley. He's in Huntington Beach, coastal Orange County, so those are going to be more conservative voters. But especially along like Seal Beach, Huntington Beach, there was just a lot. Like with Dana Rohrabacher, people were just tired of him. I mean, this guy was Putin's favorite congressperson. Just stupidity after stupidity with this guy. So that's what I'm saying. With Michelle Steele, like, that's going to be a competitive one. And the Republicans, trust me, the Republicans in Orange County, this was the land where all the good Republicans go to die per Ronald Reagan. And now it's all blue. They are angry, and they're gonna come. It's gonna be like a Quentin Tarantino movie in 2020.
All right. That's a great way to end the segment. Coming up, we're gonna talk about money in California. Who's getting the money? Where they're getting the money from? All of that next on Press Play.